What are some practical and personal issues facing many single men and women? And how can singles live secure in Christ? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June is Hello, My Name is Single. It's written by regular guest Adrian Dorr Heinz. Hello, My Name is Single is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you could find out more about Hello, My Name is Single at issuesetc.org.
I didn't march 1 yard, 1 foot for the same sex to get married, and they're taking wrong and making it right, and taking right, making it wrong.
Those of us who are inspired by Judeo-Christian values, we're not seeking to sit in judgment of anyone. But we know that there are fundamental truths proven through thousands of years of human history.
I've referred to Joel Osteen's theology of the tyranny of positive thinking, where everybody must say positive things and think positive thoughts in order to be blessed by God.
That's the difference between preaching about Christ, where you basically just cut him apart and use him however you see fit, versus preaching Christ.
Pro Football Hall of Fame wives, love issues, etc.
I know for most people in the world, this is not a distant reality. For those of us in the West, it really has become. Thank God it has become through the advancements of modern medicine. The word plague is, well, it has some connotations for us in the well-heeled West. For most people in the world, it's a real possibility. For people in the ancient world, it was a real fear. There were plagues that took lives by the thousands, by the tens of thousands, that lasted years and that were often seen as divine judgment. There's a recent headline, How an Apocalyptic Plague Helped Spread Christianity, a CNN piece talking about a recent find in Egypt of a mass grave and of ovens for making lime and linked to something called Cyprian's Plague. We'll be talking about that with Dr. Paul Meyer here in the first few minutes of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. A little bit later in this hour, Dr. Cameron McKenzie joins us. Tomorrow, the church is remembering the presentation of the Augsburg Confession. He's professor and chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. There are claims made by pagans and by critics of Christianity that almost every Christian holiday has real pagan origins. I did not know this, but apparently even claimed pagan origins to the Nativity of John the Baptist being remembered today by the church. Pastor Joseph Abrahamson will join us and dispel some of those claims about the pagan origins of the Nativity of John the Baptist. Then Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org will be our guest for the last few minutes. We'll talk about media coverage of the shortage of Roman Catholic priests. You can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Joining us to talk about the discovery of ancient relics in Egypt from an apocalyptic, that's what it's being called in the press, an apocalyptic plague that allegedly helped spread Christianity. Dr. Paul Meyer, professor emeritus of ancient history at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo and author of numerous books, including his latest, The Constantine Codex. Dr. Meyer, welcome back.
Good to talk to you, Todd.
As a historian, how would you describe the events of the so-called Cyprian Plague?
Kind of a shame. Cyprian, of course, was a very noble church father in North Africa, and it almost ascribes the plague to him. But it happened during his time and just before his death, as a matter of fact. You got to remember, in the ancient world, with its bad sanitation facilities and its lack of medical knowledge, there were regular plagues. And by the way, they were fierce in terms of taking away a good fraction of humanity in a country. Today we talk about, you know, 2 cases of polio across the world, and everybody gets excited and say, oh, is another plague coming, or measles coming back, or whatever. They don't know what the term plague means. They were fierce things that would carry away sometimes 40% of the people, almost half the people dying of plague. In the Peloponnesian War, for example, Athens, in 429, 2 years into the war, I had a terrible plague that ravaged Athens, and that year the Spartans didn't invade, but it killed Pericles and one of his sons. And it just, it keeps going this way in the ancient world. Periodically, the bubonic plague comes along and just wipes out a whole section of Europe. Now, this one in the ancient world is described indeed both by Cyprian and Eusebius, the church historian, and the fact that in Egypt they discovered these lime pits. In those days, this was regarded as a way to keep the plague from spreading and to decompose the body and so forth to get it out of the way as quickly as possible. And so it's no accident at all that we have interest in this. The article for CNN was written by Candida Moss, so right there I was very, very concerned because she wrote a very bad book, frankly, called The Myth of Persecution, in which she tried to say that the martyrdoms didn't happen or there were very few. She did better in this article because she granted that there were indeed deaths that some attributed to martyrdom. So I was pleased that maybe she's turning the corner a little bit or trying to redeem herself.
So did Cyprian's plague happen before the legalization of Christianity in the Roman Empire?
Yes, it did. Cyprian died about 254, and the Christianity wasn't legalized until the conversion of Constantine after the Battle of the Milvian Bridge in 311. So it was about 50 years into it, and Christianity was a growing minority, and so it was regarded as not something. Well, the pagan priests, of course, would use these plagues and claim that the Christians caused them. And the ancient gods of Rome that had made Rome great were ticked off at the growth of Christianity, and therefore they were, some of the persecutions started. As a matter of fact, the last great persecution against the church in 303 was such a situation.
It seems as though both the pagans and the Christians believed to some extent or another that plagues like this were of divine origin. Does Cyprian intimate this in his musings on the plague, or Eusebius?
Well, if you can't understand what's happening, somebody's angry, either the one true God or the pagan gods as such. So very often they try to explain it that way. Cyprian himself thought it might be part of a punishment of God, but with a kind of... A lot of the Christians had this apocalyptic idea that, indeed, this is a tumultuous thing which is coming across the world. It is the end times. Again, people are always very prone to claim because of the problems, earthquakes and fires and plague and so forth, that the end times are coming. This happens to the present day yet. And so it's very typical then to ascribe it to the god or gods, plural.
Did the earliest Christians in the 4th century that we are talking about here, did they have that general expectation that, I mean, apart from plagues, did they have that general expectation that seems to be reflected in the very earliest Christian, even St. Paul, that the end of the world was imminent?
Well, yeah, that Jesus will return imminently is the idea. And the earliest church thought he'd probably do it by year 100. And this is what always amazes me about the gospel writers. Thank God that they didn't share this idea and thought that maybe it might be important to take down the doings of Jesus, put him in writing, because who knows if he will return in the year 100. If they were sure that he was returning, there's no need then for history, you might say. There's no need to keep the record going. You can do that by telling your kids and your grandkids. And that would take you to the first century, no question about it. But thank God they took pen in hand, as it were, early on, and decided, no, this story must be written down. And so within even 20 years of the resurrection, we have the beginning of the writings in the New Testament. St. Paul's letter either to the Galatians or 1 Thessalonians, or indeed the reference to Easter in the 1 Corinthians. So it's so important to emphasize that we have the account in Scripture from eyewitnesses or near eyewitnesses, and not written long, long afterwards. This was the Bultmannian school that suggested that if you have a late authorship for the Gospels. Then you have time for mythology to develop, and the story grows and gets elaborated. Well, 20 years is really not enough time for something like that to happen. And this is, the Gospels themselves, as you well know, but not just in conservative circles, but they're getting an earlier and earlier dating, not a later and later dating, as it used to be thought they were written after 70 A.D.
So what they found here in this city, presently Luxor, in Egypt, is, how would you describe it, mass grave, and then you said lime pits, that was a common means of disposing of large numbers of the dead?
Yeah, especially quicklime. If you want to get rid of a body in the ancient world and therefore get rid of the source of contagion and plague, get it out of the way as fast as you can. And so stack them together, put lime around them, and that'll help decompose them quickly.
Now, I'm wondering about the extent of the Roman Empire at this time. Can we say that one of the great boons that the empire had brought to its subjected lands, relatively easy travel and safe travel, might have also helped spread plagues like this?
Yes. Plagues are always spread by contact, by communication, physical communication, touch. Again, you have to remember, in the ancient world, you have cities that are crowded together. You can see in Pompeii, for example, how the houses are built almost one right upon the wall of the other. And so this is going to spread contagion and disease and plague very, very easily. So we have this isn't just the only plague that hit the ancient world. I mean, you have continual catastrophes coming in and then spreading like wildfire. Indeed, the Roman Empire did make communications very possible, and this is one of the things that aided Christianity simply in terms of hanging up the traffic lights in the Mediterranean world, so to speak, so that St. Paul and his associates could bring the good news to what we call today Turkey and then Greece and Rome in that order.
Dr. Paul Meyer is our guest, Professor Emeritus of Ancient History at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo, and he's author of numerous books, including his latest, The Constantine Codex. A few more minutes with him on the other side of the break. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We talk to the biggest names in religion today, liberal bishop John Shelby Spong.
I don't think Jesus ever preached the Sermon on the Mount, for example. I don't believe anybody ever took five loaves and two fish and fed 5,000 people. I don't believe that's possible to do.
Liberal Bible critic Bart Ehrman.
There's a difference between what the historical Jesus actually said and what the Gospels say he said. And to understand what the historical Jesus was really like, we have to get behind the Gospels.
Muslim critic of Christianity, Reza Aslan.
By definition, the resurrection is an ahistorical event, and so therefore historians have no right, no business commenting upon it.
Where else on Christian radio will you hear these guests challenged with important questions? Talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues Etc. Listen live or on demand at issuesetc.org.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
We now have 7 Spanish language transcripts of Issues Etc. that you can download for free.
Ahora tenemos 7 transcripciones en español de Issues Etc. que se puede descargar gratis.
These broadcast transcripts cover the 6 chief parts of Luther's Small Catechism and include a teaching on why do bad things happen.
Estas transcripciones cubren las 6 partes principales del Catecismo Pequeño de Lutero e incluyen una enseñanza que se llama ¿Por qué pasan las malas cosas?
Guests include Matt Harrison, Peter Bender, and Carl Fickenscher.
Los invitados incluyen Matt Harrison, Peter Bender, y Carl Fickenscher.
You can download and print these Spanish transcripts for free. Just go to issuesetc.org and click Publications.
Se puede descargar e imprimir estas transcripciones en español gratis. Solo vaya a issuesetc.org y haz clic en publicaciones.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about the discovery of an ancient burial ground that seems to be related to an apocalyptic plague that allegedly helped the spread of Christianity. Dr. Paul Meyer is our guest. Dr. Meyer actually has spent a long career in the halls of academia, setting the record straight on ancient history, and especially as it pertains to Christianity's place in it, something that is a rarity at the university and college nowadays. Often the very historicity of Christianity is being challenged, even in history departments at universities and colleges. Your kids are out there, your grandkids are out there, they're facing these challenges. LCMSU can help connecting your college or university-aged child or grandchild with solid Lutheran resources and solid Lutheran congregations. Find out more about LCMSU, lcms.org/LCMSU, lcms.org/LCMSU. Dr. Meyer, what do you make of the claim made in the CNN article that this plague was instrumental in the spread of Christianity, giving it, I think in the words of the author, kind of the PR that it desperately needed? What do you make of that?
Well, at times of crisis, you really want to know what's behind it, and is this the end? If so, am I okay with the gods or the God? And that's when you turn. For instance, if we had a meteorite heading for this earth that would wipe out the earth and so forth, I'm sure people would get quite a bit more religious, wouldn't they, as the big rock approaches us. So that's very normal that in moments of catastrophe or crisis or plague or pestilence, or earthquake and whatever else, that people are looking for security in this immense festival of non-security, and therefore they turn to religion. So it would help, I think, not only Christianity, but maybe the pagan priests would have a second chance at the people.
Would you speak briefly to the thing that at least other guests who have delved into the history have noted several times here on the air, and that is, from the very beginning, at the time of plague, Christians did something that was more rare among the pagans when the two religious systems were
This is constantly brought out by Christian apologists. They point out that in moments like this, it were the Christians who would take care even of pagan neighbors, whereas the pagans would abandon their own relatives when a plague came along. But it was the Christians who sacrificed themselves in terms of taking care of their neighbors. And so this is one of the tremendous distinctions between Christianity and paganism, even in terms of the way they live their lives.
I wanted to give you an opportunity, because you did know that the article for CNN was written by Candida Moss. She had written that book that you mentioned before that calls into question the vast majority of the incidents of martyrdom. Your opportunity here at the last few minutes of our conversation to kind of give us a primer on early Christian martyrdom to set the record straight there.
Well, there's no question that many, many Christians suffered terribly in the persecutions. That's absolutely borne out, not just by Christian sources, but by pagans themselves. For example, one of the earliest references to Jesus Christ in pagan literature is from the pen of Cornelius Tacitus, a Roman historian, an ace historian. Really good job he does in terms of what happened every year in the Roman Empire. And in the year 64, Great Fire of Rome broke out. And Nero's throne is tottering because it happened on his watch. And so to save himself, Nero blames the Christians. And Tacitus tells us that they were named for a Jesus Christ who was crucified by one of our governors, Pontius Pilate. And the pernicious sect was almost eradicated until suddenly it gained new vigor. There, by the way, is a beautiful outside testimony to Easter and Pentecost. Suddenly gained new vigor, and even flow as far away as Rome, that common cesspool into which things hateful come from all over the world. And then he said, first the leaders of the sect were arrested. Then on their testimony, vast numbers of Christians were arrested. So in this first persecution alone, we have vast numbers of Christians attested to by a pagan, not somebody who's trying to make heroes of these Christian martyrs, but a pagan. And then she has the audacity to say very few Christians were martyred in the first three centuries. This is impossible. She really plays fast and loose with the truth. And I think by being a little bit more honest in this particular comment for CNN, she's maybe trying to redeem herself.
Dr. Paul Meyer is Professor Emeritus of Ancient History at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo, author of numerous books, including his latest, The Constantine Codex. You can purchase several of Dr. Meyer's books at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Meyer, thank you very much for your time.
Good to be with you, Todd. Blessings.